Amen to that.
As John McCain will do.
Yes, I fear that he will. A choice between John McCain and Hillary or Obama is not much of a choice.
Yes.
And, of course, I'm wondering about a third party. Well, when we get back, we'll talk about all these things, or we'll let you talk about them and get your ideas. But I certainly somebody like Dr. Dobson that says that he will not vote for John McCain. We'll be right back.
Now you can bring Berkey Purification Power anywhere with the Sport Berkey Filtration Bottle. Ideal for sporting games, camping or boating, or Sport Berkey is small enough to store in your glove box, so it's ideal backup for unexpected emergencies like blackouts, floods, or earthquakes. It's simply the best personal water filtration system available. So effective you can drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. Unlike other sport bottles, the Sport Berkey's patented filter formulation is so powerful it removes cysts, parasites, harmful bacteria, and chemicals like herbicides and pesticides. It even reduces radon-222, lead, and other heavy metals. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go everywhere, so take one to work and keep another in your glove box for emergencies. Get the Berkey Sport for only $39. Get two for $70 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Order your Berkey Sport today. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Where do you think one of the most toxic places on earth is? The answer may surprise you. It's in your body. The colon is a natural breeding ground for disease-producing germs. It may not sound like a very appealing subject, but it should not go ignored. For over a decade now, natural health expert Dr. Lauren Ritter has educated people everywhere about the benefits of internal cleansing. Now, these benefits include higher energy levels, more comfortable digestion, high immune support, and healthier looking skin. Now you can try Dr. Ritter's colon cleansing program from the privacy of your own home. It's safe and natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. Don't let your body be the most toxic place on earth. Take care of your health by cleansing your colon and body. Dial 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914. Call now to find out how you can get the colon and body cleanse risk-free for 30 days. Dial 1-800-457-9914. Call now.
Stand back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. So you pick the story up there, Joel.
Well, you know, someday a good person, if you were in there taking our country through this new world order and losing our sovereignty, would be like Woodrow Wilson, who said 3 years some night after he had signed the Federal Reserve Act, "I have unwittingly destroyed my country. We've come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of a small group of dominant men." You know, I still think that Romney has big ambitions for another run 4 years down the road, but hopefully before he gets down that path again, I or someone else will have a chance to give him a briefing on the globalist threat and help him understand what he would be facing. Of course, then that would make him totally unelectable because he'd have to take the position that Ron Paul is. But this does put Ron Paul in an interesting position in terms of you know, obviously the only reason Huckabee's been in here has been, you know, to essentially block out Romney's ability to pull from the anti-McCain type vote. So with Romney bowing out, Huckabee and Ron Paul are still there to compete for the anti-McCain vote. You know, even though Huckabee is a friend of John McCain and acts as his bosom buddy, nevertheless, people who don't like McCain are voting for Huckabee. Now, the establishment doesn't want Ron Paul. That's a given. But it will be interesting to see where the conservatives' votes go in the remaining primaries now that Romney isn't competing, especially in Texas, Ron Paul's home state. If Huckabee stays in the race, it will be to keep those votes from going to Ron Paul. If he quits and endorses McCain, then Ron Paul gets a huge leg up on the free media plus a speech at the convention. Now, I don't think the public powers that be want that, so I predict that Huckabee will stay in the race. Now, there's an outside chance, despite the fact that the powers that be despise fundamentalist Christians, that they might allow Huckabee to get a vice presidential slot. McCain is shifting rapidly to the right, at least rhetorically and verbally, to try to convince conservatives to back him. Though I notice that no one's calling him a flip-flopper as they did Mitt Romney. And if that still doesn't convince the Republicans that McCain is now one of them, they might bring Huckabee on board to sucker the Christians into voting for McCain. Now, Ron Paul's strategy has been to garner enough delegates so that in a contested convention he might have some leverage. He has at least 42 now and possibly more, depending on the legal challenge his campaign is mounting in Louisiana, where, as you know, the state Republican leadership there illegally allowed other candidates to qualify delegates for the caucuses after the deadline. And so they basically loaded up the slate against Paul, who had a majority of delegates going into the deadline. So they simply informally extended the deadline to everyone except Ron Paul. According to the Ron Paul official campaign site, projections from last night's or Tuesday night's results resulted in at least 3 delegates in Alaska, 5 delegates in North Dakota, 3 from West Virginia, 3 delegates, 1 in Minnesota, and 4 delegates, 1 in Colorado. Ron also got 3 delegates, as I said, in this horse trade with Huckabee forces so that Huckabee could get the win in West Virginia. Ron Paul ceding his delegates to Huckabee allowed him to top Romney in that case. However, with Romney pulling out, those votes could only be abused in a negotiation with Mike Huckabee against McCain. But it appears that the huckster is in league with the powers to be to help get McCain elected, and so that use is very unlikely, that McCain would try to best, I mean, Huckabee would try to best McCain. Since Romney will probably not pick up any more delegates, joining forces with Romney to have some influence probably won't work either. So it appears, frankly, that McCain will easily win a majority of delegates before the convention, so there will be no broker deals, and the Ron Paul strategy of having influence at the convention will not work. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if the GOP even tried to deny him the right to speak at the convention due to his small base of support. But in all fairness, they should. But as you know, politics isn't fair. Now, as for the, there's a very interesting thing that's come about, as I had talked about when this campaign began. One thing the Ron Paul campaign has done more than anything else is grow the movement. He has brought together so many more people into the movement who are very, very much energized. They aren't going to want to go away. They're going to want to get Ron Paul to run an independent candidacy, since he isn't going to win the Republican nomination. Now, I don't know if Ron has the fortitude, physical stamina to do this. This is very, very hard on his life. It's very, very stressful to run this kind of a campaign. You can see the stress in Ron's voice when he talks. And yet, you know, his campaign, his supporters are going to deny it. You know, he went through the problem when he ran as a libertarian of trying to get ballot position in each state, and it was very, very difficult to do. But the one thing that I would tell his campaign now, and I intend to, you know, when the time is right, his supporters are so voluminous in every nation, every state, that it wouldn't be difficult at all to get ballot position through petition. because his supporters would do all the work for him. It wouldn't hardly cost a thing. So I think that is not going to be an issue. The issue is whether or not he wants to take the pressure that that involves. I predict now that if Ron Paul does run an independent campaign, which would threaten the McCain run for presidency because it would draw votes away from the Republican side and some of the independents that would tend to go Republican, especially those anti-war votes. It might even bring over some votes from the Democratic side. And the reason I say that is because the Obama vote represents, in my opinion, that nearly a half of the Democratic Party is strongly against the war and against the mainstream candidate, Hillary Clinton, which is obviously backed by the powers that be. If Hillary Clinton is maneuvered into the position, those Democrats are going to feel very, very angry that the convention took it away from them, that is, their candidate, Obama. And it's going to happen that way because when you run all the numbers, most likely they're going to end up with an equal amount of elected delegates. What's going to make the difference now are these 400 superdelegates that the Democratic Party has. And let me explain that. You know, even though the Democrats claim to have a more Democratic-type primary where they apportion the votes depending on what percentage you get, they don't have any winner-take-all primaries. They have this huge block of 400 superdelegates, which represents almost 40% of the delegates. And they can throw that. These are people who all work for the big establishment, and they can throw that to any one of the two candidates to make sure that the one who gets the nod is the one they want. So I think what they risk is a huge rebellion, Dr. Stan, within the Democratic Party. And that rebellion is going to be looking for someone to carry on the anti-war tradition because Hillary Clinton is not going to cut it. She's not believable. She's had too many opportunities to fight against the war as a standing senator. She hasn't done it. Obama isn't going to do it either, but nevertheless, he has made a very strong campaign position that he would try to get these troops out by 08. Now, I fully expect that the establishment will throw a series of military disasters at him, which will force him to stay in the field, and he won't have any choice if he were to get elected. But if they put Hillary in, as I expect, then they're going to have a major rebellion on their hands, and the 50% of the Democrats who will feel betrayed at this convention will be looking for an independent candidacy to handle their anti-war feelings. This would accrue to the demise of Hillary, and they don't want Hillary. I mean, they want Hillary basically to engender a fearful reaction among the independents and the Republicans to get them behind McCain. Otherwise, there's not a lot of enthusiasm, frankly, among the rank and file of conservative Republicans for John McCain, no matter how they try to reposition him. They need the hate factor of Hillary to drive the establishment, needs the hate factor to drive the rest of the nation back to the Republicans, which they are very reluctant to do after the Bush years. And this will be especially exacerbated, you know, if they have all these Democrats out there wanting to vote for an independent candidate. So what they usually do is they pull a phony independent candidate, not truly independent, someone put up by the establishment. If you remember back in 1992, they ran Ross Perot as an independent, but specifically because they knew that the most votes he would take away from were George Herbert Walker Bush and get Clinton elected. And that's exactly what happened. What was interesting is, never before have we seen the media bend over backwards to bring in an independent who didn't have very much support to start with until they started to put him on the debates. Even when Ross Perot quit, do you remember that? He quit the campaign, then decided to get back in, they immediately put him back on the debates again. I mean, you can imagine them doing that for Ron Paul. It just never happened. Never happened. So I suspect that if you have an independent candidacy on the right that will take votes from McCain, they'll take another independent candidacy to split off those independent voters and try to balance things out to make sure that Hillary doesn't win. And I expect Michael Bloomberg, who has deep pockets, to be that Ross Perot of our own day if needed.
Yes,
so it's not over yet in terms of the negotiations and the wheeling and dealing that's going on behind the scenes.
How many candidates are there in the Republican convention? Do you have any idea?
What do you mean, candidates?
Well, in other words, how many delegates in the Republican convention?
There's about 3,800.
About 3,800. Okay, so.
And there are about 2,000 in the Democrats with 400 superdelegates.
Okay.
Which is more than enough to sway the election if it's anywhere near close. They can sway it to either candidate they want. Now, Obama claims that he has about a third of those superdelegates, but that could be just leading him on or make it to appear as if it's kind of fair and balanced now.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Joel Skousen.
Berkey Security Pack is your one-stop solution for unexpected emergencies. It provides you with purified water, light, power, and communications ability. The Security Pack includes a Berkey Light water purifier, an LED base, two Berkey Sport filtration bottles, the Berkey battery adapter, the Berkey MP solar charger, as well as a backup set of two Black Berkey purification elements. The Berkey Security Pack is important every day and a must during emergencies because it provides purified water, long-term low-energy lighting, backup battery power for your Berkey LEDs, free long-term solar power for communications devices such as radios, walkie-talkies, and cell phones, as well as power for small applications. Get the one-stop solution for your emergency and everyday needs. The Berkey Security Pack, a retail value of $518 for only $399 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa.
St. Anders from Midas, February 7, 2008, gold, 897.90 ounce gold coins can be purchased for $924.02, $455.15 for half, $227.58 for quarter. That's $924.02, $455.15, and $227.58. For years, Ron Paul has taken the position to uphold constitutional rights. He's been branded by special interest groups as doctrinal, refusing to bend his values. I can only imagine the pressure applied by Congress as he stands alone for these principles. He has given up a medical career for this. Ron Paul is running for president. The ideas of strong currency, ending the war, defending the Constitution, and protecting civil liberties are catching on. As a thank you, GCNLive.com, Midas Resources, and I would like to send you a free copy of the Ron Paul Family Cookbook. Call 800-686-2237 for your free copy. Again, that's 800-686-2237. I hope his values are touching your heart as deep as they are mine. That's 800-686-2237. Thanks again for supporting Ron Paul.
Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case it's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you, and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. We've been talking about the the election, the way things are lining up, the possibility of a third party run by Ron Paul, and of course Michael Bloomberg being brought in by the establishment to make sure that the conservative vote and the moderate vote and even some of the liberals who might otherwise have voted for Ron Paul would be going with Bloomberg. So pick the story up from there, Joel.
Well, this is going to be a major, and it already is on the Internet, among the libertarian crowd of whether or not Ron should run as a third party or as an, stay on the path as a Republican. The general consensus is, among the most savvy observers, he ought to stay on the Republican platform clear up till the end because he gets the most publicity that way. In fact, if Huckabee ever does drop out, Ron Paul's going to get some major votes and some major delegates. And probably get back up to the 10-12% instead of the 4-6% that he is now. I don't think the powers that be want that to happen. That's why I think Huckabee will stay. And but nevertheless, if he does stay clear through the convention, it makes it even less likely that he will be able to run on a third party candidacy, just because that will look like a real betrayal to his Republican chances. And we have to remember that Ron Paul is simultaneously running for his congressional seat again, if he jumps party to the Constitution Party, for example, which is the strongest of the at least constitutional conservative third parties. He would certainly never be able to win his congressional seat, and the same thing if he went on the Libertarian ticket. So the only thing that he could do is do a Joe Lieberman thing of run as an independent campaign. Even then, that may put his congressional seat at risk, because many of the Republicans in his district may view him as selling out his commitment to stay with the Republican Party. So Ron Paul is in a difficult position relative to making an independent run.
All right. I certainly concede everything that you've said. So it's going to be very interesting as this develops now, and especially with now only three Republican candidates still in there. And, of course, how anybody could accept John McCain's words that he is a conservative, one only has to look at his voting record to realize he's no conservative at all.
Well, that's true, and, there's just real animosity within the campaign. For example, let me see if I can find my Jack Wheeler quote. Jack... have you ever interviewed Jack?
Yes, I have.
Well, Jack is a real insider, really. At least he's an insider wannabe, and he's kind of the right wing's Indiana Jones. The old line conservatives have been very much aligned with a lot of bigwigs in the Council for National Policy. But he is seeing things a little different now. He says the number of fellow senators who think John McCain is psychologically unstable is very large. Some will admit it publicly, like Thad Cochran, who says, "The thought of his being president sends a cold chill down my spine." Others relate times when McCain screamed four-letter obscenities right in their faces in the Senate cloakroom, like Dick Shelby, Rick Santorum, or Jim Inhofe. "The man is unhinged," one senator told Wheeler. "He is frighteningly unfit to be commander-in-chief."
Now, yes, I read that, and I was very, very impressed. I usually don't agree with Jack Wheeler, but on this one, I was certainly totally impressed.
Well, the rest of the article that he wrote is absolutely untrue. I won't say it's absolutely. He writes about, I might as well cover this now, about a defector named T. This is a son of a Russian a KGB officer who apparently was present in the North Vietnamese prisons. And, Wheeler claims that the CIA has all of the interrogation, the translations of all the interrogations and all the dirt on McCain, in his collaboration with the North Vietnamese. There are other stories out which say that there are several films made by the North Vietnamese featuring John McCain saying, bad things about the American war effort, and that all of those things have been captured by the CIA and put underground and buried under lock and key. Jack Wheeler feels that when Clinton gets into power, that she'll use her power to bring those out of the oil, that she has insiders within government, and that the CIA is against Bush, and that the CIA is going to leak this material, the Clinton campaign, destroy the McCain. All of this is just absolutely ignorant about the true way in which government operates. Despite the NIE supposedly opposing the war in Iran, this was only posturing. This is not because the CIA is not completely controlled by the dark side of government. They are not opposed to Bush. Bush is, their spokesman. But they do play both sides of the political spectrum. And Jack Wheeler's position on this stuff being held in abeyance to destroy McCain is just whistling in the dark.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Joel.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take 5 to 10 minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the Advanced Berkey Light Purifier for only $279 by calling New Millennium, 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Here are just a few of the benefits associated with Heart and Body Extract. Blood sugar, cholesterol, and circulation levels return to normal. Arteries unclog. Angina is gone in just a few days. Blood pressure goes back to normal. An irregular heartbeat returns to normal. Heart and Body Extract works by making sure your body is in balance naturally with absolutely no negative side effects. Doctors who've tried Heart and Body Extract with their patients are thrilled with the results. Dr. Mark Goodman talks about his experience with a patient of his who started taking Heart and Body Extract.
I had a bad experience with a gentleman who was a colleague of mine for many, many years. And so we got him this product, and he could not walk from his house to the mailbox to get his mail because he had congestive heart failure. And after being on this product for about 4 to 6 weeks, he was able to walk 15 minutes per day. And after 2 months, he was walking up to 3 miles per day.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online at hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And before we go on, Joel, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get a trial copy of the World Affairs Brief and perhaps even subscribe to it as I do?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. There is a modest subscription price for the World Affairs Brief. It's how I support my work, trying to let people know what's going on behind the scenes. The World Affairs Brief is showcased on my website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com, and there is showcased the current edition of the World Affairs Brief, which talks about the media manipulation on behalf of Senator McCain that has led to the Super Tuesday victory. People can get a sample copy of that brief, or tomorrow they can get a sample copy of tomorrow's brief by emailing me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. And if they forget that, they can just go to the website, and it tells them how to do that on the front page. Lots of other good things on this right-hand column, many things from my archives. I specialize in summarizing much of what has gone on in the various government cover-ups, from the assassination of JFK to Oklahoma City bombing to 9/11, and to a major piece about my general theory on where I think this globalist trend is taking us into a third world war. That's under the title of Strategic Threats of the Coming Decade. Also get all the free news or links to the best of the news sources that have been posted on the website from my researchers, and these volunteers do a very good job of putting up every day the top stories that you should read, and then every Friday I do an analysis of those stories, adding the things which they purposely leave out, which is how they influence most people's opinion.
And I go to World Affairs Brief website every morning after I finish my emails. Well, let's go on. Where are we going next now?
Well, John McCain just got through with his speech at the Conservative Political Action Conference here. He, of course, took the stage to woo conservatives and Romney supporters in his first steps towards trying to unify a very fractured Republican Party. He said, "We've had a few disagreements, and none of us will pretend that we won't continue to have a few. But even in disagreement, especially in disagreement, I will seek the counsel of my fellow conservatives." Well, of course, he then stressed that he wouldn't always bend to that counsel, which is what we would certainly expect from someone like the maverick McCain, who has thumbed his nose at conservatives most of his life. He says, "If I am convinced my judgment is in error, I will correct it. And if I stand by my position, even after benefit of your counsel, I hope you will not lose sight of the far more numerous occasions when we are in complete accord." Actually, the few occasions would be a more accurate thing when they've been in accord. You know, on things like opposing perks and other things. He's done a few things. Of course, he votes for big budget items in other ways. But, you know, when McCain started to say, on the issue of illegal immigration, there were boos and unrest cut him off in the audience. This was obviously an issue that still provokes a great deal of opposition to McCain, because he pushed for amnesty along with President Bush. That's not what the conservatives, wanted to hear. So, in any case, he continued to woo conservatives, but it's interesting. I just got an email from one of the Ron Paul supporters who was there, and he said that Ron Paul gave the best address that he's ever given, he heard, and there was a tremendous, overwhelming response. Now that Romney has backed out, Ron Paul got a tremendous boost there and was very, very popular and well-received.
Well, he's the only conservative who's running. Certainly neither Huckabee nor McCain should wear that mantle. And I would think that when McCain pretends to be a conservative, why, those words would just, would just not come out of his lips. I don't know how he can compromise himself so to lie publicly.
Well, this is going to accrue to the benefit of Ron Paul, there's no doubt. And so this is a good position for him to be in right now. And as I say, the best of all worlds would be if Huckabee dropped out. By all rights of me, all the political pundits expect him to. I mean, if Romney dropped out because he couldn't win, why wouldn't Huckabee drop out? The only reason Huckabee will stay is to stop the accrual of votes and delegates from going to Ron Paul.
Amen.
So that's very, very serious. Now, I'd also like to cover, kind of in juxtaposition to what I've written, an assessment from Justin Raimundo in his piece, "The Winner of Our Discontent." He's very libertarian in his point of view, and is a Ron Paul supporter, though he comes from a leftist background. Some of what he says coincides, but it's an interesting juxtaposition, and it'll give me a chance to critique some of his quotes and then show how I think he's on the right track. He starts out and he says, "This is one election season in which the conventionalism is no sooner formulated than it is refuted by events. Hillary, for example, was, quote, inevitable. Now she's content just to hold her ground. Rudolph Giuliani was the, quote, front runner in the national polls, and today he's the laughingstock who earned the distinction of paying the most cash ever for every single delegate he gained. As I put it at the tail end of last year, the theme of the election season 08 is the collapse of the alleged front runners. Well, I think that's very humorous, alleged frontrunners, because if there's anything that has exposed the primary tactic of the media to throw an election to someone is to declare them frontrunners right from the very beginning. And the public simply wasn't buying at this time. It is this disparity between the falsified standing in the polls in favor of these frontrunners and their actual low levels of support that has led millions to suspect deliberate media manipulation, not to mention the obvious and systematic denial of media coverage for Ron Paul. Now, this is going to end up being the story, I think, of this election. When it's all done and said, Dr. Stan, I think that people are going to be very much more aware of the way in which the media shows bias in these elections, and very much more sensitive to it. Raimundo continues, on the Democratic side, the big story is Barack Obama's strong challenge to the Clinton machine, coming on strong as the anti-war candidate with ads that clearly pledged to get us out. My comment is, which he won't do. Obama's momentum wasn't enough to overcome the determined rear guard action and racially divisive defense of the Clintonites. That's true. They did muddy the water with racial epithets. They muddied the water with Clinton playing on the feminism side of tearing up at predictable moments. It was a very funny show this last weekend with the Garrison Keillor Prairie Home Companion. They did a spoof on Hillary Clinton reading her script and forgetting to not say the little cues like you're supposed to tear up now and other things like that. It's quite funny. On the Republican side, says Raimundo, the fragmentation of the GOP continued apace, with the party apparently split along regional as well as ideological lines. McCain, while proclaiming himself the front runner, won on both coasts. Now, my comment here is, he only won in states that will go Democratic in the actual election. Now, think about that. He won in New York, New Jersey, which have not gone Republican, that won't go Republican, and in California, which won't go Republican. So these wins actually don't do anything for a Republican victory in November. As all the professionals know, these are wins that aren't in Republican territories. They're meaningless in terms of a presidential run for office. Romney took the Midwest, and, of course, the huckster conned South into giving him the nod, said Raimundo. Of course, that's because of the predominance of evangelical Christians who can't see past their religious preference, it appears. One has to note that the weakness of Romney, says Raimundo, was that he did well in caucus states. Now, this is the same thing for Ron Paul. In caucus states, only those active and knowledgeable about the political process participate in caucuses. So this is not representative of an election where ignorant voters express their somewhat managed desires. I mean managed in the sense that the media manipulates them and they express them at the voting box. Naturally, Romney did well in regions where he had a personal connection, Massachusetts and Utah. And then he continues and says, this represents the fragility of the old GOP establishment, which is backing Romney. Like their candidate, they are out of ideas and out of steam. Well, this is where Raimundo shows his left-leaning ignorance. The real GOP establishment is not backing Romney, but McCain. He confuses the old Goldwater machine as the GOP establishment, and it's not true. They are the ones who think, or have thought for many years, that they're in charge of the party, but they slowly allowed globalists to take control of the actual Republican Party machinery at a national level and in the presidency. So one conservative side of the GOP establishment thinks that they are in charge, but aren't. And the other, a bunch of neocon globalists who really do run the show. The naive side of the equation is the old Goldwater conservative establishment. These are all aged people who are dying out. They're representative in the Council for National Policy people. They're economic conservatives in general, anxious to protect their wealth, who congregate annually at the CNP meetings, but who are so anxious to regain political power that they have endorsed the slow road of unwise compromises ever since the Reagan administration. Anything to keep the political game of having influence. And they mostly come from mainstream Christian churches, even though there are some evangelicals among them, but they're usually well-heeled television-based ministries. The more humble Christian evangelical groups, which are more often not breakoffs from major denominations that have a more fundamentalist point of view, they tend to be much more conservative, much less mainstream. Unfortunately, they can be influenced, as Pastor Chuck Baldwin has complained so vigorously and so often, by other misled evangelical fundamentalist ministers in trying to get into the mainstream. In other words, there are people like Pat Robbins who have made it big and who always go to promote the establishment Republican candidate. And then there are a lot of smaller ministries that are more humble that are trying to make it into the mainstream, and so they tend to follow the lead of people like Robinson. Fortunately, we have Focus on the Family head, James Dobson, who is refusing to vote for McCain and said he would rather not vote. I wish he would say we should get Ron Paul to vote. You know, he needs to understand that Ron Paul is really the one the Christians who value their liberty should be supporting. Now, speaking of the mainstream Goldwater, old Goldwater mainline conservatives, these are the ones, thanks to old line leaders like Richard Vigory, are starting to realize that they've been duped, they've been had. Yes, many of these back Romney because he is an outsider and does give the illusory promise of change. But these mainstream conservatives have also been suckered into the illusion of change because they're so driven by picking someone who is charismatic and can win. That ought not to be a major consideration. We ought to be backing the person of principle, whether or not we think that they can win or not, you know, as long as they don't have obvious, you know, terrible presentation and things which would be an embarrassment to the cause. People like Ron Paul are tremendously credible and respectable and are worthy of our support, even though they are so principled that they're not generally popular. But, you know, these well-heeled people in the conservative movement generally look down their noses at Ron Paul for being too ideological and unwilling to compromise. And, you know, these are those that have long been deceived by the new breed of GOP establishment leaders, which actually run the show. And they are starting to realize that, I think. Silly Republican leaders, cheerleaders like Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter have for years been led to believe that they are in the in crowd. And, you know, have come out for Mitt Romney. They obviously weren't on the in-group or they would be going for Mitt Romney or for John McCain. Now that Mitt is out, I wonder where they will go. You know, Rush, for example, has made some very strong statements against McCain. It would be a very strong loss of face if he were to come out and finally go that direction, even though he hates Hillary even worse. I doubt if the Ann Coulter, strong will that she is, will go for McCain, even with the threat of Hillary Clinton being there. And I think that's healthy for the conservatives to start to see that, you know, you can only vote for the lesser of two evils for so long. Pretty soon you get that both are so evil, both are so much on the same side against us, that you gain nothing by voting for the Republican lesser of two evils. In fact, we in fact have more damage to this country when a Republican tells us that these socialist programs and these wars are legitimate and constitutional than we would if Hillary Clinton tried to pull those off, because she would engender a great deal of resistance. Now, few of these types, I doubt, will ever have the courage to actually fight back against those in power. They'll simply do something else, find some other semi-mainstream person, and I hope it isn't Newt Gingrich or some phony principle like that to support. I wish they would support someone like Ron Paul, but that may be asking too much. Meanwhile, the globalist wolves in sheep's clothing like Dick Cheney and his CFR cohorts that surround the president are the ones that are truly in power. And fortunately, the only silver lining in all of this manipulation is that their controlling hand is now starting to show and be more visible than ever before.
Well, you know, the Council on National Policy was originally organized back in the late 80s to be a counterpart to the Council on Foreign Relations, and before long it had been infiltrated, taken over, and today it is a cheering section for the Council on Foreign Relations and its globalist policies. That's what's really so tragic.
Yeah, just like the Heritage Foundation has become relatively co-opted, and so has the Cattle Foundation. You know, used to be very hardcore libertarian, and now they are opposed to Ron Paul, and, you know, just, it's amazing what funding does. Once you get the mainstream and you get all these mainstream funding, there's a very not-so-subtle pressure to take moderate, quote, moderate positions. I just cringe every time they talk about McCain appealing to moderate Republicans. He's appealing to liberal Republicans. But, of course, nothing on the left is radical. Nothing on the left is extreme. It's only moderate or progressive. That's the new term. And everything on the right is extreme or right-wing radical.
Well,
amazing
that's
how they use those pejorative.
That's how they, of course, use the language, how they use words to influence our emotional response. And, I mean, who would want to have anything to do with anything that was radical? And yet, of course, you know, there's nothing more radical than this globalist concept of destroying the sovereignty of our nation and merging us into the New World Order, the New World Religion, with the New World Leader, of course. Well, we're just about out of time. You got about a minute to wrap up the program.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see this, what they do with Huckabee in this situation. I'm not sure how they'll handle it, but I'm convinced that their major concern now is Ron Paul. They've got the nomination locked up for McCain, but as long as Ron Paul stays in there, it's still a contest. They have to treat it as an open convention still, and they've got to be very, very concerned about what's going to happen in these primaries.
It's
so
going
we'll
to be fascinating.
It's
going to be fascinating to watch, and we'll be looking over your shoulder as we have you here on a regular basis. If you'll come and giving us the benefit of your wisdom and background, and of course, at one time, why Joel was in charge. What was the conservative organization?
The Conservative National Committee during the Reagan administration.
Okay, fine. Well, thanks very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. Bye bye. God bless.
Black Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, Black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a 2-pack for only $99 or a 4-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
This is George Whitehurst Berry of the Genesis Communications Network. Have you ever wanted the truth about the economy? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the fastest growing program on GCN. Our one-hour program airs weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, just after the Power Hour and just before Alex Jones. To listen to rebroadcast 24 and 7, visit our website at www.hearitonline.com and click on the appropriate link. Our unparalleled guest lineup has included patriots such as Congressman Ron Paul, Scott Ritter, former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Murray Neal, inventor of the revolutionary dragonskin body armor, and Philip Tourme, USS Liberty survivor. We also focus on alternative health and survival topics. Go to www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. And we have a four-tape set. It's called The Secret Government. And it goes into the background of what's really going on. And, of course, there's secret societies that work behind the scenes. It includes the interview with Professor Quigley and my talk, certainly on the Brotherhood of Darkness, and certainly the interview with Norman Dodd, who was the director of research for the Reese Committee, which investigated the great tax-exempt foundations back in the 1950s and found they were financing communism and socialism. The Secret Government four-tape set is very, very important. And then we have another tape set called Secret Societies, and that goes into how they've controlled both political parties going all the way back to the 1930s and made mockery out of the electoral process. And, of course, you can get Secret Government four-tape set and the Secret Societies four-tape set and other information as part of the Secret Government special. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and we think it's a pretty good deal. If you get the Secret Government special, you need to understand what's really going on behind the scenes. Now, then, of course, we do have a great new four-tape set on the Bilderbergers. We have a DVD on the Bilderbergers. It's Alex Jones' Endgame. We have two books, one Daniel Estulin's The Bilderbergers, and the other is Bilderberger Diary by Jim Tucker, James Tucker, who's been tracking the Bilderbergers for 20 years or more. And my wife's reading the book. She says it is so fascinating because you begin to understand the influence of these people, these elitists, who really run the world from behind the scenes and have until recently suppressed any mention of their organization in the regular media. Because, of course, they control the people who control the media. Well, then, of course, if you want to get into the satanic aspect of it, we have a four-tape set on satanic crimes. And, of course, when I say four-tape set, at least with the more modern ones, you can get them in CDs if you prefer. And then, of course, we have the book, Satanic Crimes, going into the Bilderbergers and how they interlock with the royalty of Europe and have been involved in pedophilia and all sorts of criminal activity. And, of course, they are never charged with crimes because they're above the law. So you can get, remember, four things. There's two books on the Bilderbergers. One's the Bilderbergers, the other's Bilderberger Diary, the four-tape set. The video Endgame, and then the four-tape set on satanic crimes, and the book Satanic Crimes gives you the background of the Bilderbergers. Got a great new four-tape set on weather modification. We have a DVD put out by Bob Fletcher on weather modification. We have a book on weather modification. We have another four-tape set on HARP, the High Altitude Auroral Research Project, and a book, HARP, the Ultimate Weapon, which, of course, can be used to help modify the weather and change the jet stream. We've got a great new four-tape set or four-CD set on RFID chips. You need to get this information. You need to help us get it out while we can. Because believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there is a small group of people who want to rule the world. And today, for all intents and purposes, they control the wealth of the world. They control the great tax-exempt foundations. They control the media. They control our educational program. And as a result, they really, of course, control what the American people believe and think. And most Americans think we're a democracy. We're not. We're a republic. How are they convinced us we're a democracy? Because they control the educational system. And yet, if you read the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, and certainly the Bill of Rights, you will never once see the use of the word democracy other than to cry it and say the last thing we want is a democracy. For democracies are air spectacles of turbulence and contention, are air incompatible with personal liberty and private property, and are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. That comes from the 10th of the Federalist Papers, written by James Madison. But you'll never learn that in school. Understand that they've stolen our heritage. These people are lawbreakers. They're traitors. They want to destroy the sovereignty of our nation and merge us into a world government. We'll be right back.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 psi, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take 5 to 10 minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the Advanced Berkey Light Purifier for only $279 by calling New Millennium, 888-80344.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Carl Tycribb, and we're going to be talking about what's happening on the world financial markets and how this is going to be used down the line to bring about a global currency, because you really can't have a global government if you don't have a global currency. So with that as a background, Carl, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you again. I really enjoyed our last conversation, and it's a pleasure to come back on and discuss these very important issues with your listening audience.
Well, now, remember, this is an entirely different audience, so you can go ahead and repeat some of the things you said before, because I think your information is so valid. So you sort of pick the story up, and I'll let you know when we go to our first break.
Sounds fine. Well, as you know, Dr. Monteith, one of the things that interests myself as a researcher in global governance is the whole area of finances, economics, currencies, the use and the abuse of money. And one of the things that really struck me a number of years ago, actually in the later part of the year 2000, November of 2000, was that the International Monetary Fund held a one-day special conference to look at the question, one world, one currency, destination or delusion. And they brought on Robert Mundell, who was the father of the euro, and a number of other leading economists and banking experts to take a look at, do we need a one-world type of global currency? And this is kind of what set me going. Why are you going down this road? Why are you talking in this manner? Isn't this something that's utopian? And the more research I did on this, the more I realized that while the general public, for the most part, may not accept, may not even know about the talks at the IMF and at the United Nations and at different levels, the idea of a one-world currency isn't new. It's been around for some time. It's actually been discussed at the Federal Reserve, the Boston Federal Reserve, back in the late 1960s and early 1970s. And they took a look at, taking a look at different ideas towards a single global currency. And so that's always been in the back of my mind. That's something there that's been playing for a number of years. And as you're aware, I ended up writing an article on it that got published in January and was put on the web, titled One World, One Money. And we took a look at the Foreign Affairs, the Council on Foreign Relations, and their publication, Foreign Affairs, the main June issue of 2007, where they also suggested the idea of a form of global currency. Now, their ideas wasn't new. Obviously, it's been kicked around for some time. And the other thing that really got me at my attention was the formation a couple of years back, this has already been a few years back, of an organization, it's like an association of sorts, of economists, of mid-tier bankers, anybody interested in currencies. And the association is called the Single Global Currency Association. They've been meeting now for the last 4 years, once a year, to discuss what they can do towards moving the world towards a single global currency. And they recognize, and many others have recognized, that there's no easy way to get to that point. But they do see two ways to achieving a one-world monetary unit. They see either crisis or through regionalization. Of course, both of those elements are coming into play.
And I think it's so important that people understand that there are people out there who do not believe in America. They may call themselves Americans, they're not, they're globalists, and they hate the sovereignty of our nation. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest today is Carl Tykwib, who's really a researcher, and I've had the pleasure of reading his articles over a period of many years, and certainly I was very taken with an article he wrote in January dealing with this idea of a global currency. And what people do not understand, what the average person doesn't understand, is that there are many people at the highest level of our government working within the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission, or certainly within the financial structure of our society, who hate the sovereignty of our nation, who hate the idea of individuals being free. They believe that only the ruling class should rule. And basically their ideas date back to the time of Plato and are described in Plato's classic book, The Republic, where he believed, of course, we had to have a ruling oligarchy, democracy didn't work. But, of course, for these people who are planning today to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, and by certainly the definition of the Patriot Act, those people who want to change our form of government are terrorists, but since they control the government, nobody's ever going to accuse them of that, for, as they say, treason never doth prosper, for if it prospers, no one dare call it treason. Under any circumstances, they realize that we will not have a one-world government unless we have a one-world currency. And, of course, Carl was just talking about they have two means of doing this. One is through crisis, and the other is through regionalization. Would you like to pick up on that idea, Carl?
Sure.
Now, remember, the people are coming on now. I have not heard you before. We just came on with the music.
Okay, that sounds good. The idea of regionalization, again, is not a new idea. It's been kicking around for some time. And, of course, our model that we can use is the European Union. And the stepping stone towards a global currency is in the realm of regional currencies. The Single Global Currency Association, various other economists, such as Robert Mundell, they recognize that a global currency requires stepping stones. And the most logical, the most easily attainable way of doing that with the least amount of pain is to go down the road of creating regional currency blocks, regional economic and political units, and then from there we can combine those regions, and then we can establish some type of international currency.
And basically we would have a European Union, a North American Union, a South American Union, an African Union, an Asian Union, an Arab Union perhaps, Southeast Asian Union. All these regional areas give up their sovereignty, have a uniform money, and then, of course, we merge them into the one-world dictatorship.
Absolutely. Absolutely
right
on that. Going down that road.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carl was simply talking about the two ways that we could have this global currency. One was through a crisis of some sort, where, of course, the whole system would collapse, and then they'd have to have a new currency. And the other, of course, would be this idea of regionalization, where we would have the European Union, which is already in existence, and then the North American Union, which they're working to establish today, and lying to the American people about it. And I don't know why George Bush couldn't come right out and say, yes, this is what we're doing. But, of course, he ridiculed anybody who talked about the idea of a North American Union or a North American NAFTA highway. Why? How ridiculous. But, of course, it isn't ridiculous. The highway is already under construction. And then the South American Union, the Asian Union, the African Union, the whole, everything is in place. They're implementing it, but we cannot, or they cannot, let the public know what they're doing. Because, of course, people want their sovereignty, people want to be free, but the elite ruling class, these people of great wealth and great power, the Henry Kissingers and David Rockefellers and Zbigniew Brzezinskis and the people, of course, they work with, do not care what the public wants because they know what's better for us, or are simply too uneducated, too common to understand what's really good. They intend to actually implement Plato's ancient plan for the Republic. Pick up the story there, Carl.
Certainly. When you're looking at some of the history of this, one name comes out, and that's David Rockefeller. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but in 1971, he was an invited guest to the Empire Club of Canada, which is located in Toronto. And it's kind of the elite mucky-muck of Toronto who get together and come and listen to international speakers and recognize authorities. And David Rocker came and discussed the idea of trade and investment relationships between Canada and the United States, and he dropped a bit of a bombshell. He suggested, and remember, this is 1971, he suggested at the Empire Club of Canada that a new international currency unit should be seriously considered. And he was looking down the road at maybe the use of special drawing rights, which is a basket of currencies set up by the International Monetary Fund. And at that point in time, the SDRs, special drawing rights, were fairly a new idea. And it was really catching on with internationalists. They saw this as being one way towards the creation of a single global currency. And David Rockefeller brought that out at the Empire Club. And again, that's 1971.
Yeah.
So this has been thought through for quite some time. It's not a new idea. It's just maybe new to the public. But typically, we're behind the eight ball when it comes to really having a firm handle of what's going on and how we're being manipulated and taken down certain paths. So that's something that that has been thought of for, coming on 40 years, at least 40 years. And actually, you can trace it back to World War II, the end of World War II. There was already discussions at that time during the Bretton Woods conferences on creating a global currency. One suggested name was the UNITAS. Another suggested name was the Bancor, which is a combination of the word bank and the French word for gold. And so these are not novel, they're not new, but they are certainly gaining some speed. They're gaining momentum. And when you were just discussing earlier the concept of regions, that has really pushed this forward much quicker than anticipated, at least especially by myself. If somebody would have suggested 3 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, when the euro came out in 2002 as a hard currency, that we would be looking at creating other models, I wouldn't think it would be happening quite so rapidly. But it is. 2010, the Gulf Corporation Council, which is made up of Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Yemen, Oman, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, and I believe one or two others are in the process of forming a single regional currency for those nations. And so that's the next regional currency on the block. South America is talking about doing the same thing. Last summer, they were already looking for different locations where they would be putting the central bank for South America. So things are progressing along at a pace much more rapid than what the general public sees. What will it take to wake us up, Dr. Montes? I don't know.
Well, of course, people, a lot of Americans are very upset about illegal immigration in America, and they don't understand why the federal government refuses to enforce our immigration laws, why they haven't gone after all the employers who are hiring illegal aliens in violation of the law, why they haven't built the fence that they promised along the border. Why you can come in here as an illegal alien and you can get all the social benefits, you can get housing subsidies and food stamps and free medical care and even subsidized college tuition. This really doesn't make sense unless unless you understand that the real policy of America, at least the people who control both political parties, this invisible government, is to merge the United States with Mexico. That's what it's really all about. And when you understand that, then it makes sense. Then you can understand why John McCain and George Bush want to make everybody who's here illegally suddenly become legal. They call that amnesty. Just as they did in the Reagan administration when they lied to us and told us there were only a million illegal immigrants, and if we would simply go along with this their program of amnesty, they would then enforce the laws which are there to go after the employers, and certainly to have a Becerra program so people could come in if they were needed to work in the fields and to enforce border control. But of course, already 2.7 million illegals at the time, just as there are four more illegals today than they're admitting. And of course, if they do, of course, give amnesty, then they can bring in their families and all their relatives, and it will destroy America. They want a multicultural, they want a multilingual society, so they can play one group against the other. And when you understand that, everything makes sense. And of course, that is why, of course, they're talking about this North American currency. They call it Numero. Do you think that that'll ever come to pass?
I believe it very well could. I think what would require would be a substantial crisis, especially on the U.S. side. And my country, Canada, our two countries, the U.S. and Canada, are the largest trading partners on the globe. So a major crisis that would happen on your soil in terms of your the worth of your dollar, the value of your dollar, a credit crisis of some kind impacts us as well. It also impacts Mexico. It's interesting when you read some of the material, and I've got a few documents here that when you read between the lines, you can really kind of figure this out fairly quick, and sometimes they're really blatant about it as well. The idea is that America is the central point. It's where the consumer power is. It's where the technology lies. It's the hub of North America. No question about that. Canada is viewed as your energy and commodity breadbasket. We've got more hydroelectricity than we know what to do with. We have some of the largest deposits of uranium on the globe, and we have some of the richest fields for petroleum on the planet. And so we're viewed in a North American strategy as being almost like the battery bank for the United States, whereas Mexico is viewed as a place of inexpensive labor. It's the human capital side. That's where you're going to have your workers. That's where you're going to have your people who are willing to do the jobs that most Americans don't want to do anymore. And, of course, you go to any type of construction site or landscaping industry in the U.S. or any menial task. Typically, you're going to see Mexican labor involved in that. And so there's a strategy here. It's actually brilliant in some respects. I'm not happy with it, but it's brilliant. It's to combine those three elements and put it into a single system.
And, of course, they really don't care what the American people want or feel or believe. They have their agenda, and they're going to carry it out because they are an elite, and the elite should rule, and the rest of us should simply go along quietly. But, of course, in the process, of course, of taking down our border control, why, of course, they're going to have to lower the living standards. We can't have the people in Canada and the United States having such high living standards when the living standards in Mexico are so low. And so we're going to have to lower the living standards of the average American so we can all be equal, because who can be against equality? And that's what's happened in Europe. Under the European Union, of course, for the people of Germany, once they opened the floodgates and, of course, let the people of Eastern Europe, the impoverished people there living, the status of peasants, in Latvia, Estonia, Romania, Hungary, and Eastern Europe, suddenly let them into the European Union and changed the currency, and the people in Germany lost almost half of the value of their life savings. And that's what's going to happen here, is they destroy the value of our currency. In fact, we'll be lucky if they only destroy half of the value of the life savings of the American people. I think it's going to be far worse than that. So go right ahead, Carl.
One thing that needs to come into play is the idea of creating a global tax. And again, this is hand in glove with economics and politics. In 2000, I was a delegate at the United Nations Millennium Forum. And I was attending a number of sessions on revamping the international system. One of the ideas that came up, and it was looked upon very favorably, was the idea of creating a a global tax of some type. Again, this is not a new idea. It's been kicking around for some time. James Tobin, who's an economist, proposed the idea of a tax on international currencies already, oh, a couple of decades ago for sure. And it just never really seemed to go anywhere. But in, it was in the late 1990s, the Canadian government took a look at this. And the it actually happened in 1998, October of 1998, that there was a bill put forward at the Canadian government to support a single, to support a global tax when and if it came into existence. And that passed. And so it gives you an indication of just how the mindset has already been prepared for globalization at a level we can't even anticipate.
And, of course, that's what the Law of the Sea Treaty, the so-called Lost Treaty, L-O-S-T, Law of the Sea Treaty, is all about, because it'll give the United Nations control of the certainly of the seabeds throughout the world, and you can charge people to be travel by sea. And, of course, what they want is more money for the United Nations, for the world government, so they can have their army and their police force and their courts, and so they can control everything. The massive bureaucracy, the new international Soviet. We'll go right ahead, Carl.
Dr. Monteith, one of the things here that strikes a person is when you're looking at some of the literature, and you're reading through some of the documents, people know full well what this is about. When I was talking about the Canadian government passing the Tobin tax, it's when the politicians who were involved in putting the agenda forward, when they gave their speeches and reasoning for why they were pursuing this, Lauren Nystrom, who was the member of parliament who pushed the idea forward, he was a gentleman from Saskatchewan who was a member of the National Democratic Party, which is a socialist political party. In fact, the only Canadian political party that is a full member of the Socialist International. Well, when he was proposing this idea during the sessions at Parliament, this is what he said, and this gives us an indication of what's going on. Quote, if there were a 0.1% Tobin tax on foreign currency transactions, that would raise, in 1995 dollars, $176 billion. That's a lot of money. A Tobin tax of 0.003% would be enough money to fund the United Nations peacekeeping around the world. One of the consequences would be the establishment of a global village which would have a common good amongst all nations of the world. There would be a strengthening of international organizations. The United Nations would become a meaningful world government and would share things with national governments around the world. There could be a permanent international peacekeeping forces. There are many things that could be done, unquote. Powerful. I mean, this is on the public record. He wasn't hiding it.
And, of course, you know, a lot of people may wonder why NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization troops, why are NATO troops fighting in Afghanistan today? I mean, what does that have to do with guarding Europe? Wasn't it the North American Treaty Organization there created to protect Europe from the wicked communists? But you have to understand, NATO is now the world army, you know, the world government army. It's been used for globalist military actions, and that's why they're in Afghanistan. But they can't tell the American people. They really don't want either the Americans or people throughout the world who understand what this globalist movement is all about, this effort to create the new world order, the new world religion, with a new world leader. They don't want them to understand until it's a fait accompli or we're so far up down the road that nothing can be done to stop it. And so they simply continue using the NATO, and of course, NATO North American Treaty Organization. Troops are fighting in Afghanistan today, and very few people have the courage to ask and say, why is NATO fighting in Afghanistan? Go right ahead, Carl.
I don't know if you remember, but back last year in March, I was on the radio with yourself, and I had returned from a NATO conference. Actually, it was a NATO conference that was held in the fall of 2006, and it was sponsored by NATO, the Canadian government, and a couple of strategic think tanks. One of the topics was putting NATO ships, having a NATO navy, and there was at that point already a grouping of ships under the NATO flag, having those ships circumnavigate the African continent. And that was a quietly talked about suggestion that this might occur in 2007. And the reason it would occur, if it did, was twofold. One, it was going to show the world that NATO was a force that had a global reach.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carl is just talking about NATO, and of course I brought up the subject as to why NATO is fighting in Afghanistan, and simply pointing out that it's being used as the world army. North Atlantic Treaty Organization was formed to protect Europe against the wicked communists, who were also being funded by our government, and so we were creating the best enemy money could buy now that the threat of communism is supposedly gone, which of course it's not at all. Why now, of course, they use NATO troops to fight in Afghanistan because the global army. And Carr was just saying that when he attended a conference, a NATO conference, not too long ago, they were talking about a navy for NATO. Why would NATO need a navy? And they were talking about the NATO navy actually being circumventing or circumnavigating Africa. Why would a NATO navy be down in Africa? What does that have to do with guarding Europe? So you pick up the story there, Carl.
Sure. In 2006, this is one of the things that was quietly being talked about in certain military circles. At that point, there already was a NATO naval contingent, and it had been operating in the Mediterranean for quite some period of time already in the war against terrorism, and it was interdicting drug traffickers, and it was interdicting arms shipments and that type of thing from Africa to Europe, and acting as kind of a filter in the Mediterranean. Well, in late 2006, there was talk, and it was quiet talk, that maybe they would take this contingent of NATO ships, and they would go around the entire coast of Africa. And in 2007, the summer of 2007, that indeed did happen. There was a NATO navy, of multinational ships. It wasn't just one country. It was a number of countries. It was a number of ships. And it was a period of many months, but over the course of the summer, they traveled, they traversed from the Mediterranean all the way around, past Nigeria. They conducted operations off the Nigerian coast, all the way around to South Africa, where they conducted operations with the South African Navy and the military force of South Africa. Then they went all the way around to the Indian Ocean side and conducted operations all the way along until they got right up to the Suez Canal, and then, of course, they re-entered the Mediterranean. The reason they did this was twofold. One, to demonstrate that they were a global force, that they weren't simply a force that was confined to European shores and the European theater, that they had a global reach. And the other side to that was just simply to see, can this work? Can we pull together a multinational naval force? And, of course, a navy is a technical operation. There's all kinds of standards, communications issues, all types of different things that have to be thought through. You have many languages, different computer programs that may be used, different operational procedures. Could this work? And at the end, they found out that, yes, they do have a global naval reach.
Well, I feel so much safer knowing, of course, that NATO now can get all around Africa. But, of course, it's all part of this incredible drive towards the world government. And people don't understand that, of course, the major thrust of American foreign policy is the destruction of the sovereignty of our nation. But we can't tell the American people that, because the officials who are doing it have sworn to uphold our Constitution and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And these people are domestic enemies who are actually using their position to undermine the very fabric of our society, our sovereignty, our freedom. Because when we merge into this world government, the Constitution that has given us the greatest degree of freedom ever known to mankind will, of course, soon become simply a remembrance of things past. Go right ahead, Carl.
What you're saying is so important. There's so many times that we more or less just take a look at the news and we think that that's all that's happening, is whatever CNN or CBC, and my country of course is CBC or ABC, whatever the affiliate is, if that's all that's being played on the television, that's all that exists. And we have a very narrow idea of how fast the world is shifting and how fast it's changing. In the fall of last year, we put together an issue of our publication on what the World Federalist Movement is looking at. And, of course, the World Federalist Movement is the largest pro-world government lobby group on the planet. And where they're planning on going, what they're planning on using to promote world government, is definitely worth taking a very serious look. And regionalization, no surprise there, is part of the package.
And Gerson, they sold us that Walter Cronkite, the most trusted man in America, longtime CBS anchor, television anchor, he was a world federalist, and he slanted everything along that line. But, of course, there's not one person in 1,000 that understands the world federalist system. And, of course, they have some of the most powerful people in the media. They're all tied in to this idea of a one-world government, a one-world religion, and a one-world leader. Well, Carl, you go right ahead.
Well, thank you. We're taking a look at what the World Federalists were up to. August of last year, August of 2007, they had one of their major conferences, one of their World Congresses, actually. And so we took a look at the various agendas and some of the memorandum and material that was coming out of that meeting and put it together into a single frame, and a very clear picture was emerging. Here's a few of the ideas that were coming out of the conference, and some of the directions that they saw the world going in terms of promoting a one-world system. One of the biggest things on the agenda was the promotion of regional and continental government structures, and they saw that as forming the core of a world government arrangement, and the United Nations could be reformed to manage these regional entities. And so they saw that as being one of the most essential, one of the most important ingredients in forming a global government. The other thing that they were recommending was that religions could co-opt into a global faith and develop a type of global ethics, create a platform where religions could put together the standards, the moral standards that the world would need. And, of course, you'd be looking at bridging religions into some type of recognized international faith. The other ideas that were being discussed at that meeting, one of them was that they would simply look at forming, like what we talked about earlier, an international taxation system. And they recognized that if a world government was to really come into play, it would need to have its own funding without the constraints of any type of national system. We can't allow the U.S. or Canada or Russia or my goodness, Tuvalu or New Zealand or any other country on the planet to say to the up-and-coming world government what it could or could not do. It would have to be completely independent, and of course being independent requires an independent form of economics, of finance. So that, of course, was all part of the play, too. One of the things, though, Dr. Monteith, that they were discussing, and it's coming up this fall, is the official meeting to take a look at creating a world parliament for the United Nations. It will be happening in Geneva. I'm not sure of the exact dates at this point. The exact dates aren't publicly released, but that is in the works for this fall, and we will be starting full-blown official discussions of what this will mean. Now, there's been lots of discussions already. The World Federalists have been discussing it. There's been meetings at the United Nations to discuss it. I was part of that already back in 2000. But they're going to be upping it one.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's called Tight Crib. Before we go on with our discussion of this idea of moving us towards a one-world currency. I wanted to have Carl tell you how to get hold of his webpage, because his information is excellent. We followed it for a number of years. His articles are outstanding, and a tremendous amount of information and research goes into that. So how can people get to your website, Carl?
Sure, they can go to www.forcingchange.com. Forcingchange.org.
Forcingchange.org. And that's what it's all about. It's all about force, isn't it?
That's right. And what we've done is we've put together a monthly publication. It's an intelligence-style publication. We're not a news source. We're not providing you with what's happening right now in terms of news. Rather, we're giving you an education on some of the bigger picture items that you will not find in the news. And so every month we put together an intelligence journal. We have a membership section that requires a subscription. For Radio Liberty listeners, we actually have a special that's running. If Radio Liberty listeners would like to take a look at it, they just need to go to forcingchange.org/liberty. And by going to /liberty, they will be getting a 30% discount on a full one-year membership. And that's going to give them access to literally a treasure chest of research materials. But again, we're not a news service. We are an intelligence service. We take a look at the big picture, and we look at documenting everything. There's very little that we ever report on that doesn't have endnotes, footnotes, bibliographies, and a lot of source material so that people can actually go and take a look for themselves and make sure the context is right and that they can see some of the other nuances behind the scenes when we discuss globalization.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for our guest, our telephone number, 1-888, that's 888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, that's 464-8295. And Carl was speaking earlier of an article that appeared in the I think June or July issue of Foreign Affairs Magazine. Now, Foreign Affairs Magazine is published by our invisible government. It's read by the elite, and I've been reading it for 45 years, and I'm not a member of the elite, but I want to know what they were doing. And this was a fascinating article because, of course, they're talking about how the currencies are going to fail, and they know exactly what's going to happen. And when they fail, of course, it simply impoverishes all the people who have savings or pensions or insurance policies or anything tied to the dollar bonds. And so, but basically, then they're talking about the creation of an international currency that would be privately issued and tied to gold, so it would have some stability. And when you take a currency and you take away the gold backing, and the government can print all the money they want to and then lie to you about the rate of inflation, and if you really believe we're only having 3 or 4% inflation, look at the price of gasoline over the last 2 years, look at the price of food over the last 3 years, and tell me we only have a 3 or 4% inflation. Are you going to believe what the government tells you? Are you going to believe your lying eyes? Well, they intend, I believe, to destroy the value of our currency. They are printing money. They're creating credit, you know, right now at the rate of 15 to 16% a year. And this is happening not only in the United States, but throughout the world. As they move, I believe, to destroy the existing currencies, and, of course, eventually out of the crisis, the people will cry, the government, oh, protect us, you know. And, of course, they already have their plans. Do you think we already have a privately issued a gold-backed currency out there sometime, a global currency, Carl?
There is one entity out there, goldmoney.com, and it's a private entity where you can go in and buy gold grams and use that as a form of a currency. But will we have a international currency instituted by a government that is backed by gold? I don't know. We seem to have a mentality that we have to back everything with paper, credits, accounting figures that's in the computer somewhere, because as soon as we put gold to it, there's a standard. It's a way of keeping things honest. And it doesn't seem that we have a system of global governance that really wants to pursue honesty. So I doubt that we're going to have a currency that's going to have any type of substantial backing. We may have a currency that may be involved for world trade with multinational companies that might have some type of a backing. There may be a two-tiered system in that respect. But for you and me, I think we're going to be looking at a currency that is backed up by thin air.
But, of course, throughout history, this has been tried. It was tried in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. It certainly has been tried, you know, hundreds of times down through the centuries. It's always failed. They tried it in Venice. They tried it certainly in Florence, you know, in the middle centuries there, somewhere between 1300 and 1600. They created tremendous prosperity for a time, and then, of course, it eventually all collapsed. Because, of course, you can never depend upon governments to act responsibly. And the politicians will always, of course, insist on spending more money than is available. And eventually, of course, inflation destroys the value of the currency. And you end up with a dictatorship. It's happened time and time and time again. And that was, of course, what led to Adolf Hitler taking over in Germany. The collapse of the Weimar Republic. People were desperate for stability. And Adolf Hitler promised to give them prosperity and to return, of course, the idea of the honor of Germany that had been lost with the signing of the Treaty of Verdun. Well, let's go, of course, to Mike in our basement. Again, if you're out there and you have any questions or comments, our number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Mike, did you have a question or comment?
I have a question. I'm wondering what might be the easiest way or the simplest way to explain the CFR and the problems that go with that to the people who have never even dreamt of such a thing.
All right. How would you respond to that, Mike? I mean, Carl?
Mike, that's a tough one, because if people, for the most part, are ignorant of lobbyist interests at that level, it's really hard to convince them that they exist, number one, and that, number two, they actually have the power, the influence, the interests that you claim they have. That's a really tough thing. I found that over the years, the only way to convince people is to actually show documentation. Again, that requires that the person that you're showing that to actually has an interest and will take the time to read it and look at it and seriously think about it. But unfortunately, Mike, I don't think we have a society that really is too keen on doing that. We have a society that seems more interested in let's watch Monday Night Football, flip on whatever's on the channel, whatever's on the TV, and crack a beverage. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, most people blame, you know, everybody on the right blames everybody on the left, and everybody on the left blames everybody on the right. And it's Democrats versus Republicans butting heads all the time, and this is exactly what the CFR wants us to do, so that we'll all miss the real point, which is them.
You're right.
So this is so crucial that America begins to wake up to this problem. That they're like Stan always says, they're hiding in plain sight.
I think probably the best way, Mike, would be to ask questions of someone who isn't that concerned, and ask him, see, what would you do if our currency collapsed and you lost everything you'd worked for your whole life? Well, what you've done is plant in their mind the thought that this might happen. They may scoff at it, and then you point out, well, I mean, do you honestly think our leaders, Alan Greenspan and the people who run our banking system, were so stupid they did not realize what was going to happen when you issued all these bonds all over the world that were going to fail? I mean, do you think these people are really that stupid? And then, of course, point out that there is this organization, and their address is 58 68th Street in New York City, and there that the Council on Foreign Relations, which is really a front group for a secret society that was established, and then you can give them the reference to Professor Quigley's book, but point out that the Secretary of State always comes from there, whether the Democrats or Republicans are in power. The head of the Federal Reserve System always comes from this little club, whether the Democrats or Republicans are in power. Certainly the head of the CIA always comes from this little club. And then, of course, if you have never seen the article by Richard Harwood, who was actually for many years the editorial page editor of the Washington Post, we have it, we'll make available copies. It's called Ruling Class Journalism. It was written during the Clinton administration, pointing out that the entire structure of Bill Clinton's government was controlled by members of the CFR, and that the media was controlled by members of the CFR, and the Intelligence Committee was controlled by members of the CFR, and there is a military-industrial complex, and neither the right nor the left will ever talk about it, because they're all controlled by the same people. and just ask how could they possibly conceal that if it's true, and then encourage them to write to 5080 68th Street in New York City and ask for the annual report and see who is a member. And you'll find John McCain and you'll find Hillary Clinton's husband, Bill Clinton, are both members of the Council on Foreign Relations, so it really doesn't matter whether the Democrat McCain or the Republican, or I mean the Republican McCain or the Democrat, Clinton gets in, the Council on Foreign Relations is going to continue controlling our government.
Did you mention Gene Harwood, did you say? No,
I didn't mention Gene Harwood, no.
Oh, okay.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Carl? Do you have a comment on what I said?
Well, I was just going to say that you know, Mike, you've raised a very good point, and Dr. Monteith, that was an excellent way of approaching it. You have to just look at the fact that there's continuity in certain agendas, and it doesn't matter if it's Democrat or Republican that comes into power. An example, the idea of creating a free trade zone of the Americas, the FTAA, a free trade area of the Americas. It was an idea that kind of was birthed through the Reagan period, and it really became into the forefront and publicly recognized under Bush. And then when Clinton came in, nothing changed. The agenda only went forward faster. And then when Clinton was out, of course, your current president pushed it as well, and it didn't matter if it was Democrat or Republican. It didn't matter if it was supposedly right or left. The agenda remained true.
And isn't it interesting that none of our presidential candidates, with the exception of Ron Paul, even talks about this globalist agenda, this move towards one world government. All of the candidates but one are in favor of continuing the war in Iraq. I mean, well, I thought we had, different philosophies in the Republicans and the Democrats, but that's all show business. And until people understand that, nothing's going to make sense. Hey, thanks very much, Mike.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. And, Chris, we have a telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we have Vernon calling, and Vernon is in Salinas. Hi, Vernon. Oh, we haven't been past through. There we are. Hi, Vernon. How are you doing?
Doing good, Dr. Seth. You know what? I have to agree with what Mike's saying. You know, he made a very good point that, you know what, we live in a society right now where it's just better to just watch the football game and to really pay attention to where our country is going. And it's like a sad time that we live in. I mean, all day today, that's all people have been talking about, the Super Bowl. And I asked them about, the candidates and what they're talking about, and they really don't know.
No, but they can tell you all about Eli Manning, can't they?
Yeah, they can tell me all about Eli Manning, but they can't tell me anything about what a congressman tells you. You know, yesterday I got a call from one of the campaign, I guess, little helpers, and she called wanting my vote for Barack Obama. And I just had one question. I said, why should I give Barack Obama my vote? And she couldn't answer it. She uttered on the phone.
I know.
And I said, come on, you called me. You should have like a list of why I should, a list of, things to say why I should give him my vote. But she couldn't.
Right.
And I told her, I go, you know what? The reason why I can't give Barack Obama my vote is because Barack Obama is not telling us the whole truth. And, it's kind of funny. The guy that is telling us what's really going on, like Ron Paul, he doesn't get no type of airtime. You get Rush Limbaugh, you get Michael Savage, they're just talking all kinds of mess about this guy, and he's keeping it real with us.
I know. Anyway, God bless you. Anything else you want to say to Vernon before we let you go?
I feel for him. I understand what he's saying. He's absolutely right. We know more about the Super Bowl than we know what's happening with our own representatives. I just finished reading an interesting statistic. Some sociologists had done a little bit of research, and he determined that the typical reading level for a newspaper column in the U.S. right now requires a grade 5 to grade 9 reading skill level. That doesn't sound bad. It doesn't sound good. It just sounds pretty mediocre. But then he was saying that 100 years ago to 150 years ago, the typical newspaper column had a grade 13 to grade 15, in other words, university-level reading, considering the fact that back then most individuals didn't have much more than a grade 8 reading level. That tells you something. We have an extremely lazy society, and that's really used to our disadvantage.
Well, my belief is that as this financial crisis gets worse and worse and worse, and people begin losing their jobs and losing their cars and losing their homes and they don't even have enough money to buy food, at that point they're going to ask, how did it happen? And the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is so that we'll have a lot of people educated out there across America who can tell them exactly why it happened and that it was planned that way. Hey, thanks very much, Vernon.
Welcome. God bless you, Dr. Stan. God bless Radio Liberty.
God bless. Thanks very much. And let's go to Timothy calling from Ohio. Hi, Timothy. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Dr.
Doing fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, but a guess.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a question. I just got done finishing a book called The Secret Terrorist by Bill Hughes. The back of it says, the United States is in more danger today than she has ever been. The secret terrorist organization has been working within to destroy America, its constitution, and everything for which it stands. This book gives all the details and shows how far this terrorist organization has been able to progress in the destruction of America.
But, of course, the thing is, if that's really true, Timothy, I would simply ask you, why haven't we had any other major terrorist attacks in America? Why haven't they set forest fires? Why haven't they derailed trains? Why haven't some suicide bomber gone into a department store and blown himself up? Or are they trying to focus our attention on the outside danger from terrorism? Or is it, of course, we never talk about the people who finance this whole terrorist movement? And if you haven't read the book, The Devil's Game, which we do carry, about how this whole terrorist movement was financed with your tax money and British tax money as well. And, of course, but they can't let you know that. Simply listen to Radio Liberty. You need to get my pamphlets on Foreknowledge 911. That's Foreknowledge 911. And, of course, The True Story of 911. We've never been told the truth about what really happened on September 11th. And, of course, who's really funding the world terrorist movement? It's our good friends in Saudi Arabia. It's our good friends in Pakistan. What if we insist that they stop funding the terrorist movement, Timothy?
What I was wanting to say is I read the book, and they said the Pope was behind all this, the Jesuits.
The Jesuits. Well, of course, that's, of course, some people believe that, and that leads to coming around to hating Catholics. But thanks so much, Timothy. Really appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Well, Carl, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
3 minutes to wrap up the program.
All right, 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I would just challenge anybody who thinks that the idea of a global currency is a good idea to really seriously sit down and do some heavy thinking what this would require. One of the things that's being suggested by organizations such as a single global currency association is that we need to have a world central bank to run this, to manipulate, to work this thing through. Well, one of the banks that they're modeling or would like to model it off is the Bank for International Settlements, which is the world's most powerful central bank right now. And here is one of the powerful provisions, the untouchable points of this bank. And the bank itself has a branch in China, and they say this: the bank shall not be subject to any form of financial or banking supervision or obliged to implement any form of accounting standard or to comply with any form of licensing or registration requirement. Dr. Stan, if you or I did that, we'd end up in jail. We'd be toast.
And I think it was Lord Rothschild who said, let me issue the currency, and I care not who controls the government. And these people who would control the currency would control us. And if we have simply a global currency, we'll have a global government. And that means our constitutional guarantees of freedom and guarantees of freedom there in Canada will simply become a remembrance of things past. And that's what it's really all about. Yeah. They want to do away with a sovereignty, national sovereignty. They want to do away with individual freedom and bring everybody under the control of the people who control the currency, the people who control the bureaucracy, the people who control the destiny of mankind.
You're right. It's something that we really need to wake up. That's the bottom line. We need to put our thinking caps back on. We need to take a hard look at what is going on. We need to start asking some very hard, provocative questions. Try to come up with what is really happening in our world. It's time to turn off the television. It's time to get our feet off of the off of the footstool and to start doing a little bit of legwork and to figure this thing out. And once we understand personally what is happening, then at the very least at the personal level, you can look to see, okay, what kind of safeguards do I need to put in place? What kind of mental filters do I need to put in? What do I need to do personally to be able to not just understand this, but then also to be able to operate knowing that this is happening?
And I think we have to understand that there are powerful forces that are moving us towards financial catastrophe, but they already have a solution. After all, we wouldn't be able to accept the world government and the world currency if there weren't a crisis. Bye-bye. God bless.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you, of course, enjoyed our conversation with Carl. He has some excellent information, and certainly I'd suggest you go to his website and get his information, pull it down. And if you can't remember the website, you try to remember Carl, C-A-R-L, Teichrib, T-E-I-C-H-R-I-B. You can Google him in and get his website that way. So we want you, of course, to understand that there is a move towards world government, and the most powerful people in the world are involved. And if you haven't, of course, read the books on the Bilderbergers, and of course we have a book just on the Bilderbergers by Daniel Estulin, we have the Bilderberger Diary by James Tucker, who's been tracking them for 25 years, going to their meetings unofficially, and of course they always have them followed because they don't want anybody to know what they're doing. This group of about 125 to 150 of the most wealthy and powerful and vicious and ungodly men in the world. That's the Bilderberger organization. So we have two books, we have one 4-tape set, and we have one DVD. It's called Endgame by Alex Jones. Very well done. And if you'd like to get these items all together or individually, the number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. There's a separate occult organization. We call it Skull and Bones. And we have a 4-tape set on that. And then we actually have the official membership list, which we got from one of our friends whose father and grandfather had come from Skull and Bones. We published that, and then we have the book Secrets of the Tomb, The American Establishment, and the book The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones. So that's The Secrets of the Tomb, The American Establishment, or The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones. This is certainly one of the most powerful organizations in the world. In fact, in the year 2004, both presidential candidates, both the Republican and the Democrat, George Bush and John Kerry, both came from the same little secret society that only takes in 15 members a year. You would think in a nation of 300 million, we could find somebody to run who is not a member of Skull and Bones, but two members? Do you think that happened by accident? Well, of course, you give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you want to get into the background of the Council on Foreign Relations, our certainly 4-tape set on the secret societies, or our 4-tape set on the secret government, or better still, the secret government special will give you tremendous information. And if you prefer to read about it, Bill Clinton's mentor wrote a book. It's called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. The book was actively suppressed for many years, but of course it's available now through Radio Liberty. And I would simply suggest that if you doubt what I'm telling you, we have an interview with Professor Quigley, who wrote the book, professor of history at Harvard, at Princeton, before he went, of course, to become a professor of history and economics there at Georgetown University, where he met his most famous student, a man named William Jefferson Clinton. And, of course, Professor Quigley explained to Will Clinton who ran the world and that he should become a Rhodes Scholar so he could get into contact with the ruling elite, and that's exactly what Bill Clinton did. He was a good student, and he became the President of the United States after attending a Bilderberger meeting and wowing these people there with his charm. And Bill Clinton is charming, and he's extremely intelligent. And he's the sort of man they want because he has no moral compass, no values at all. Just a nice smile and a lot of very, very powerful friends. Well, of course, certainly remember you can get the book Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time by calling 1-800-544-8927. You can get the interview with Professor Quigley if you'd like to, or of course you can get the Tragedy and Hope special that includes Tragedy and Hope, the book Foundations of Power and Influence, which has been suppressed for many years, plus the interview with Professor Quigley. That's the Tragedy and Hope special. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and then Pray for America, Pray for Revival, because behind everything are powerful spiritual forces, and then please pray for Radio Liberty.